Episode 96, Sam's Eats by Sam Way. Hi, Johnny.
Victoria, have you ever noticed that when someone begins a story by saying, to make a long story short, you will be treated to exactly the opposite of that?
Yes, I have noticed that. Or when someone says, listen, they're going to tell a lie.
Oh, yeah. Man, you've got like some incense burning and it's right by my face. So I feel like I'm sitting in an opium den or something. Far out, man.
But it smells really good.
It does, but not when it's all the smoke is going up my nose. It's like a nag champa. Did I say mag?
No, isn't it like a vanilla sandalwood? I think we went through the nag champa.
Oh, okay. I'm not getting vanilla or sandalwood. I'm just getting generic incense smell, basically.
It's kind of weird to be burning it because we are recording this smack dab in the middle of the day. It's noon.
Christmas Eve Eve.
Yes. So, like, usually I reserve the incense for a little bit of night atmosphere.
The night vibe.
Yes.
Yeah, I get it. Well, speaking of vibes, we both got, like, our Christmas sweaters on.
We do.
Got some lattes that you made up with some, well, it had like some nice, beautiful whipped cream art, but it's all dissolved now. So now it's just, it doesn't look as photogenic, but delicious nonetheless.
Noon is a little bit late for me to be drinking coffee.
It got me thinking all about like different Christmas beverages, with like eggnog being the obvious choice, but then you've got like hot cocoa, hot toddy. What's a hot toddy? Do you know?
I think it's like a rum drink with...
Well, there's hot buttered rum, too.
Yeah. Maybe it's a whiskey drink. I don't know.
Huh.
I remember you could buy that Tom's Hot Toddy mix. It came in a red and white container.
I wonder if they still have those.
My stepdad, Paul, always used to get it, and he would make hot toddies, and he would like make just the mix with water for me when I was a little girl.
Oh, very sweet. What did he put in his then, rum?
I don't remember.
I can't imagine your stepdad being a rum drinker or having like rum around the house.
Oh, there was always a bottle of Bacardi. Bacardi is the very first thing that I got drunk off of.
Oh.
The first hard liquor I drank.
And then you replaced the contents in the bottle with water?
I absolutely did.
Why does my Bacardi taste like water?
And
why is Victoria passed out in the corner? She's 12.
Close to it. Very close to it. Me and my girlfriend, Mariah, drank Bacardi and blue Kool-Aid. My mom came home from work. Mariah was wrapped in the living room curtains on the couch.
Wow.
And I was in the bathroom barfing.
Oh.
Yes.
That's a great way to begin your decades of alcoholism.
And my poor mom. She comes home after a long day of work dealing with awful people.
And then has to deal with you little shitheads.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
The older I get, the more I'm just like, I was so terrible.
Yeah. I don't think you're alone in that insight. Well, hey, that was quite the detour.
Yeah, it was.
All right. Welcome to Tasty Pages, episode 96. If you go to our website, wecookbooks.com, there's a store tab that will direct you to the amazon.com affiliate page. And there's no better time of year than to maybe stock up on a little something for yourself or maybe a gift for someone else. We've got you covered. Kitchen essentials for home cooks, some of our favorite cookbooks, food photography and styling equipment, if that's your jam.
Whoa.
And then also fun food finds if you're just looking for some interesting things to use in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
We got you. Any of those lists that we have posted, if you make a purchase, we'll get a little something in return. It doesn't cost you a penny more. It's the most immediate, effective way that you can support the fine work that we're doing here at Tasty Pages headquarters in Minneapolis.
Oh my God, I'm just zoning out.
It smells like incense and tastes like lattes.
All I'm hearing is wah, 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 wah.
Just like the Charlie Brown.
Oh, yeah. We haven't watched the Charlie. We have to find where the Charlie Brown
Christmas
thing
is. I believe all the Peanuts / Charles Schultz content is like a Disney or Apple thing, which we do not have.
Dang.
Yeah.
Dang it.
See, that's the only problem with all these streaming services splitting off on their own is they own the rights to some of this exclusive content. And if you don't subscribe...
Well, now they're all just going to start merging with each other. I'm calling it. Yeah.
Yeah, you're probably right. We talked about what we're drinking here, these delicious lattes. I guess before we dive into any other content...
Really quick, let me interject. Johnny... got these new microphones. They're not new.
I just had them sitting at the club that I run sound at, not being used for anything.
Well, to me, they're new. Then.
They're used by hip hop guys and
podcasters. they're very intrusive to me.
They're large.
Yes.
Yes. Well, and you know, very appropriate that I guess we're using them in this smoke-filled room because like that's where they typically get used, the smoke-filled studio. Anything else?
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
It was a pretty impressive setup, though.
That was rude of me.
It looks pro.
no, it doesn't.
Sure, it does.
Okay.
These microphones with these like nice black and white
cables.
Oh,
the cables are new too.
Yeah.
Hey, these are nice.
Not half-stepping.
I appreciate a good cable.
We'll talk after the show. Oh, we've been doing this new segment on the show that I cleverly call Food News. So without further ado, I thought I'd share some headlines from the world of food. First one, courtesy of Good Morning America, Panera Bread faces second wrongful death suit from a caffeinated charged lemonade. So this is the second lawsuit regarding their charged lemonade on the menu. This one comes from Florida. Big surprise.
Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. Okay, the first lawsuit came from a woman named Sarah Katz. She was 21. She died from cardiac arrest.
Very sad, very tragic.
Yes.
We're not trying to make light of the situation.
No. And as a child, she was, to make a long story short, diagnosed with a congenital heart defect. And so the large drink apparently has 390. It was labeled at 390 milligrams of caffeine,
which is
per 30-ounce drink.
Pretty much the limit of what the FDA recommends adults consume on a daily basis.
Yeah. So for someone who does not consume caffeine, say she drank it in like an hour. That is a huge jolt to your body.
Yes.
Like, insane.
According to that lawsuit, she was very aware of her health, said the family. She was very vigilant to avoid caffeine, never drank coffee. Apparently, she wasn't as vigilant as she thought because it's on the menu.
It is clearly labeled how much
the
caffeine.
Part of the charged lemonade didn't give it away.
Yeah, so...
Apparently, they were taking issue with that these were not labeled as energy drinks, and I don't know why you would go to Panera expecting to get an energy drink. I mean, maybe they have the equivalent amount of caffeine in them.
Yeah.
But like most things in life, buyer beware.
Well, moderation, too.
True.
Well, in the second suit is from Dennis Brown, who's 46, and apparently Panera has this sip club where you can get unlimited drinks when you...
Well, coincidentally, Florida Panera locations also have a strip club membership option, which is a whole different thing.
Sure.
It's a back room.
Oh, no. Okay.
And there's a pole. Anyway, continue.
Wah-wah.
Yep.
Okay, so...
Dennis Brown, if that's your real name.
Okay, so come on, be respectful, sir.
I know.
So
we're being such dicks about this whole thing. I think I just get annoyed by frivolous lawsuits. I realize when something tragic happens that people want to make sense of it, find a reason, find some closure.
Okay, here's the thing.
Okay.
So Dennis usually got three of whatever drinks... They're large 30-ounce drinks whenever he would dine there.
That is a lot of
beverages.
It is.
So whatever, does anyone really need like 90 ounces of beverage in one sitting? Probably not.
It sounds like his inevitable fate just happened sooner than he was expecting. Because if you're drinking like 3-4 soft drinks a day, and what was the amount? They're 30-ounce drinks, you said?
They actually changed it after the first lawsuit.
Reduced it, I would assume? Okay.
Because for 30-ounce, it was $3.90, but they did not take into account water dilution.
Uh-huh.
It ended up being changed to something like $2.37 for a 30-ounce drink.
Okay.
Okay, and so like 6 days. So apparently he consumed these three charged lemonades like 6 days before he passed away. On October 19th, he was found unresponsive. So that happened 6 days later. But Dennis also had, apparently he had a chromosomal disorder, and to help manage it, he did not drink energy drinks.
Okay.
But
fair. What was his normal drink of choice then?
It
wasn't these lemonades.
It could have been soda, whatever.
I mean, yeah.
That's still a lot of caffeine to be consuming.
Yes. And that's my point, I guess, is like these are tragic events that happen. No one's trying to make light of them, but the fact that you're trying to make sense of it, looking for someone to blame, perhaps looking for a reason, and you're going to blame charged lemonade and Panera and not someone's inability to maybe choose wisely.
Yes.
What they put in their body.
Yes.
I don't know. I don't want to. I sounded like I'm being insensitive.
No,
like
I get it.
I'm an insensitive dick. So, be forewarned, charged lemonade at Panera has caffeine in it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's all we need to say on that. In other food news, a woman who, where was this? Oh, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
Parma, Ohio. Mm-hmm. A woman who threw a burrito bowl at Chipotle staffer was just sentenced to working at a fast food restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, a 39-year-old woman from Ohio on November 28th was given a ruling by a judge because she
was unhappy with her burrito bowl, and after about a minute of yelling at the poor cashier, she hurled it at the cashier's
face. So this was a video that was posted originally on Reddit. It went viral. It showed her, like you said, berating the employee. My understanding was the store manager stepped in to try and defuse the situation.
It was a 17-year-old girl, too.
The one that she was originally kind of berating and confronting. And then the store manager, I think, was a little older.
Okay.
That was my understanding. But the point being, like, she was not the original target of the abuse. And the poor woman stepped in trying to, you know, defuse the situation. And then she got a burrito bowl thrown at her. Other patrons in the restaurant at the time followed her out, got the license plate number of her and her friend that left quickly after throwing the burrito bowl. Initially, she was ordered to pay a fine and serve 180 days in jail, but the judge got creative and offered her a reduced jail time if she agreed to work 20 hours per week at a fast food restaurant for 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, I don't know if I could do that, Thede. I did that long ago back in the day, but I think that would try my patience.
Well, it's fast food. It's not that serious. If your order is wrong, there is no reason why you should be yelling at someone behind the counter.
Nope.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
Yep. And probably a good reminder for people now that we're in the holiday season is, you know, just maybe be a little more aware of other people and how you're treating them and how, you know, not just service staff, but just people in general. Everyone's got their own stuff going on. We're probably all stressed out this time of year. There's a lot of crazy, nutty stuff going on. Don't throw a burrito bowl at people.
I feel like, man, I just wish everyone could work in the service industry. Had to work in the service industry for like a month or 2 months.
To
get a taste of it.
Sure. I'll go out and here's my hot take. As someone who doesn't have kids, let me tell all you parents out there how to do your job. I think everyone should have their teenage children work some kind of service job like fast food or something like that. And if for no other reason that it's going to like build a lifelong understanding and empathy for people that work those type of jobs.
Right.
Fair?
Yes.
And you get a little money in your pocket. smell like food after your shift. Go to a party and maybe people are like, what smells like pizza? And it's like, oh, it's just Johnny over there sitting in the corner with his tomato sauce stained shirt.
I always
not felt, that I'm speaking from experience or anything.
I always felt so embarrassed by the uniforms because they were always like horribly fitting slacks.
They're never good.
And polyester shirts and visors.
Yes.
Oof. No.
Now, the woman who was on the receiving end of the burrito bowl, one of the bystanders did start a GoFundMe.
Mm-hmm.
And as of December 5th, it surpassed its modest $1,500 goal and was up to $1,900.
That's very nice.
I mean, that's a, I mean, that's basically like a nice tip.
Yeah.
A generous tip.
Yeah.
For dealing with bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
So, happy holidays. Anything else?
No.
Don't be dicks, people.
Right.
Come on. What do we decide what we're going to do for dinner?
Yes.
The listeners are waiting anxiously.
We're going to
edge of their seat.
We're going to go down about half a block to Los Ocampos.
A little taqueria in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've been cooking a lot lately and we've got, you know, more stuff coming up in the next couple days for holiday festivities, so we're taking it easy tonight.
Yep.
Phoning it in.
Mm-hmm.
Or I might just see what the dumpster downstairs has to offer. Either way.
You're okay. You're a freegan.
Yes. Show topic. Holiday breakfast. Is it a thing you do? If so, what are you making? I had no idea. This was something that you suggested. I was kind of lukewarm on the topic. And I have to say, I apologize because we got like more response.
Thank you.
Than I was expecting. And kind of interesting responses, too.
Wow.
Although a lot of people seem to make cinnamon rolls on Christmas.
Yes, they do.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Are
you still there? I can't see past this incense haze.
I mean, of course it's a thing. Smoke. It was a thing for us.
The cinnamon rolls?
Yeah.
Although some years we would just open a can.
Every year we would open a can. Are you kidding me? I'm not messing with cinnamon rolls on Christmas morning. I'm lazy.
So I guess without further ado, let's share some listener answers. You want to start?
Yes. At Haas period house said Strata. That's a solid choice.
That is a fancy choice. Mm-hmm. At Maxwell Gregory 2018 said my version of Eggs Benedict, but with smoked salmon.
Delicious.
Sounds good to me.
Delicious.
Yes.
At Kim Howard said, cinnamon rolls, little egg and prosciutto sandwiches, and some mixed fruit.
What time should I be open?
Oh, that sounds fantastic.
At Mikey Eats Stuff said, sour cream coffee cake.
Yes.
A little variation on the cinnamon roll.
I love a good coffee cake.
Kind of like a better tasting Entenmann's.
I made coffee cake. Not too long ago.
You did, and it was delicious. And it freezes really well. So we had coffee cake for dessert for a week or so.
Mm-hmm.
It was delicious. What else you got?
At Megan Anigan said, pre-gluten-free cinnamon rolls, now gluten-free breakfast casserole with a hash brown crust.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
I know that we were just talking about this earlier because there was cinnamon roll, gluten-free recipe in the Cannell et Vanel book, which we've featured previously on an episode. But you're a little hesitant to try it. Is it more like the making the cinnamon rolls from scratch or that they're gluten-free?
Or both? It's both. Like, okay. I just don't... I'm not that invested in the cinnamon roll that, you know...
Well, although, I guess, you know, if cinnamon rolls are your jam, they can be made gluten-free. We can't speak to the results of them, but
I mean,
it's out there.
Yeah. I mean, I made cinnamon rolls from a can every year.
Yeah.
So clearly they're not that important. I think I've only made them from scratch a couple times. And one was from that Mountain Smoke book, the Appalachian book.
Yeah.
It was cranberry. Oh, those were delicious. Cranberry frosted cinnamon rolls.
Those were delicious.
Yes.
At Jilly in Minnesota said baked French toast with apples and raisins. That sounds delicious.
Mm-hmm.
What else you got?
Victor K said marshmallow mateys. It's a generic version of Lucky Charms.
So that's what you're having for a special holiday breakfast, my friend Victor?
Don't yuck his yum, sir.
Generic Lucky Charm. Hey, treat yourself. Upgrade to the actual Lucky Charms. I wonder if the charms in the Marshmallow Mateys are different. If it's like maybe like a pipe wrench and a lighter. I'll have to look into that.
Lee P. said, Yodam Ottolenghi's French toast.
I mean, I'm not familiar, but if it's Ottolenghi, I think it's a solid choice, and I'm sure it would be delicious. Mm-hmm. And then our friend Nora O. said, I usually make cinnamon rolls, but going to hang out here for some inspiration this year.
All right.
We'll have to follow up and see if she made something different.
Right.
Or if she just went with the tried and true cinnamon rolls. So our picks, this one was kind of, we already know what we're going to make.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's kind of where I just went with my answer.
Yeah.
But here, go ahead and share.
Okay.
You're going to probably be doing a lot of the heavy lifting with this, so.
I'll probably do all the heavy lifting because I'll be micromanaging it otherwise.
You said it, not me. I'll just strap on an apron and do what I'm told. Even if that's just get the fuck out of the kitchen and go sit on the couch.
Ooh, I just told on myself.
Cue up a Christmas movie.
Okay. So we are going to do Belgian waffles. And then I have this orange cranberry maple spread to put on it. And then I'm going to do like a cinnamon cream cheese glaze situation.
Can't wait.
And then a little bit of whipped cream. And we're going to have some bacon.
Lovely.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, I this got me thinking, though, because for breakfast, you know, you want something because chances are you're probably going to skip lunch or you're just going to kind of snack throughout the early day.
Or you might have like a lunch engagement.
Right. Or maybe like a late lunch, early dinner situation, which is kind of what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, so you want something that's filling. You want it to feel a little special. So, you know, cinnamon rolls definitely fit that category. But you don't want it to be so heavy that you're just going to, you know, feel full the entire day and you know, not want to eat anything later on. So, waffles seems the good choice as any.
Oh, there's a couple things that we did not talk about.
That
have happened to us. Baking, I'm sure a lot of people did baking. Last year, I didn't get to do any baking. So this year, it was kind of like dipping my toe back in the water. And I scaled it way back from what I usually do. I did 4 different kinds of cookies.
Just 4, huh?
Just
lazy.
4, yeah. I did a lime coconut cookie, a bitter orange glazed sugar cloud cookie, a snickerdoodle shortbread, and then a lavender chocolate chunk.
Now, were these all from cookbooks? You want to give any shout outs, or was it stuff that you kind of altered or came up with?
They were all from that cookies book by Jess Sizwick.
Okay. Which is, I know, a favorite of yours. If I recall, that made your best of list for one of our year-end.
It did. It was my my favorite. It was my favorite book of the year.
Yeah.
A couple years ago,
I believe.
Yeah. Also, we got our COVID booster.
We did. So if you're the type of person that enjoys sleeping for 12 hours restlessly while sweating profusely, I would highly recommend it. Good times. But I think we have the routine down now because we scheduled the appointments for noon, midweek, because that's when it's kind of the least busy for us. And we don't have any obligations that evening.
At around 6 o'clock, I started feeling I started getting chills and achy.
I have that effect on women, so, you know. Not surprised. Anyway, continue.
Then by the time we went to bed, we went to bed very early. We went to bed at 9 o'clock. Then by the time we went to bed, you felt like crap. We were sweating, tossing, turning. It was funny because I
drank a bunch of Gatorade.
Oh my God, we drank like 2.5 Gatorades.
I think it was charged Gatorade.
No, it was not charged.
I didn't have a heart attack. Chest pains.
And in the morning when we woke up, I was like, oh my God, you're so sweaty.
It was like sitting in a sauna and resting.
His arm was like slick with sweat. My clothes were soaking wet. I mean, needless to say, we washed our sheets right after that, but woof, it was...
I guess it beats a hospital stay.
Right?
So I'll take it.
Yeah.
It beats death.
Yes.
So get your booster.
Right?
Don't take a chance. A lot of people getting sick out there. Any other random news that our listeners are dying to know?
I don't think
so. Should we jump into this book?
Yes, let's.
Sam's Eats by Sam Way. Unfamiliar with him until we received this book. UK native and social media sensation. What did I say? He had like 1.4 million TikTok subscribers. I still have not been on TikTok, but 1.4 million people follow Sam Way on TikTok. And that was kind of how he built a following and a name. Self-taught cook. I think he kind of emerged from the pandemic when TikTok cooking videos were all the rage. And so what we have in our hands is his book full of, I'm assuming it's kind of an extension of that, like maybe recipes he whipped up in these videos. Seems to be pretty common for a lot of people that are in that social media sphere.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk about what we made and then we'll discuss in detail?
Sure.
All right.
We did maple, bacon, and pecan pancakes, pork chops with chimichurri, creamy sausage and mushroom pasta, birria bowls, and tarragon chicken.
All right. Let's talk maple, bacon, and pecan pancakes. Breakfast for dinner.
Indeed.
Cute and delicious. there was a pecan maple crumble that I thought was particularly good.
Mm-hmm.
We made the pancakes gluten-free. And for those, did you just follow the recipe but subbed out the all-purpose for gluten-free?
I did.
Okay.
And the pancakes were actually very good. They were really fluffy.
They were.
So for the pecan maple bacon crumble, what we did was you cut the bacons into lardons, you fry them till crispy, and then you toast the pecans in the fat. Those get chopped up. You add the bacon and the pecans to the syrup.
I like that in particular because it's kind of salty and sweet.
See, my thing is, like, for me personally, I don't love maple flavor a whole lot.
Yeah.
Like, when we make waffles or pancakes, I don't use maple syrup. I use jam.
Yep.
So, but this would have been delicious, I think, if you melted, like, maybe some apricot jam and use that in lieu of maple syrup.
Oh, to mix in with the pecans? Okay. Interesting.
Look at the big brain on me.
Yeah. Well, and pro tip, if you do have leftover pancakes, the best way to reheat them is just put them in the toaster.
Mm-hmm.
They stay nice and crispy. They don't get soggy.
They do sell frozen pancakes.
True.
So I don't know how much of a pro tip that is. But, I mean, thanks. Thanks for the info.
Give me a toaster and... And a hot plate, and I'm fine. That's
sure.
all I need.
That's all you need.
I'll just be in my dingy studio apartment with incense haze.
Sure.
All right. Yeah, I mean, we, as some of you may know, we're big fans of breakfast for dinner. This scratched that itch, and we made up some sausages and some bacon with it. Not reinventing the wheel. Pretty simple dish.
No.
But it was delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else on that?
No.
Breakfast for dinner?
Mm-hmm.
What's your favorite breakfast for dinner when we have it? You like going the pancake route?
I do.
Or waffles or something?
Yes.
And then there's got to be bacon involved too.
Yes.
In some way.
Well, in general, for like as far as breakfast foods go, I prefer sweet over savory.
Gotcha.
Like the bready stuff as opposed to the eggy, potato-y stuff.
See, and I think that's my preference.
It is, totally is your preference.
Whenever we go out, I rarely order like pancakes or French toast or anything. That's your jam.
That's why I used to like, there were a couple places where we would go where instead of toast, like if I ordered an omelet or like a hash skillet,
uh-huh.
you can, instead of getting toast, you can get a pancake. That way I could get my sweet and savory.
Oh, there you go.
I know.
Two for one.
I know.
How do you feel about those like obnoxious Bloody Marys that have like every single refrigerator ingredient
Gross.
Tucked into them?
Gross. I don't need a rotisserie chicken on top of my Bloody Mary.
Gonna need a bigger glass. All right, pork chops with chimichurri.
Mm-hmm.
Or as I like to call it, chimchimmery.
Chimchimmery.
First thing you have to do is get yourself some nice thick cut pork chop. They got to be thick.
Like
Lizzo's backup dancers.
The
thicker the better.
None of the little paper thin. Oh, I hate those little paper thin.
That we talked about this previously, but that's our childhood growing up was those like quarter inch thin pork chops that our mothers, bless them, would cook until they were dry as a bone.
So dry.
So, you know, well into my adulthood, I just thought I didn't like pork chops because that was my only experience with them.
You sit there dipping it into your glass of milk to eat it.
Pretty sad when that actually makes it better or edible. But yeah, start with a thick cut pork chop.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went off script from the recipe and just did these sous vide, which is how we always cook pork chops and steak and whatnot. So sorry, not sorry.
Yeah. So the chimichurri is parsley, chili, garlic, red wine, vinegar, and dried oregano.
Yes.
I did not like this at all. It was super unbalanced. It just tasted like oil. It needed more acid.
So and you think just the ratio amount we're off? Okay.
And why are we using dried oregano? Why would we
probably
not use fresh?
Probably for simplicity. I can totally see why, given the angle of this book, that there were shortcuts taken such as that. They're trying to keep it simple. They're trying to focus primarily on things that people might already have in their pantry.
But if you're having to go to the grocery and get
food costs as well. Because most people would probably have a jar of dried oregano in their pantry or spice cabinet. They might not have fresh oregano on hand.
So I'm just saying.
I totally agree with you. But I also think that this is not the first book of its kind where they're focused on real simple kind of pantry focused cooking. The Milk Street books are, you know, that we just finished are also like that. And so I would not expect to see like fresh herbs in general.
No, I think in Milk Street they use fresh herbs whenever possible. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe if it was like a main component in a recipe where it's like, you know, thyme and lemon chicken or something. But for making like a companion sauce or dressing or something, I can totally see. I'm just trying to be devil's advocate.
Yeah, and I hate that. So no.
I mean, either way, ratios were off for your liking.
Yeah, it tasted like oil.
Well, and that's generally how a chimichurri is made. And I know that when it comes to dressings and sauces like that, we're generally not fans of the things that are real like heavy on the olive oil component.
Well, yeah, because we always scale down the olive oil.
Right.
But I mean, it literally had no flavor to me other than oil.
Fair. The pork chops were good.
Yes. But of course they were
hard
good.
To evaluate them for the recipe. I know the recipe instructed you to get pork chops that had like a nice like edge of fat around the one side and then to like sear that in the pan, which is something you normally do anyway.
But it instructed you for the fat to score the side of the fat
to keep
the pork chops from curling up.
Sure. But, you know, so we sous vide them. I didn't mind them. They photographed nicely.
Yeah.
Maybe pass on the chimichurri next time.
Mm-hmm.
All right. How about creamy sausage and mushroom pasta? Pretty simple.
Sure.
As most of the recipes are.
Yeah. We used some... Did we use hot or sweet?
We used hot Italian sausage from Trader Joe's, which we've had in the past. I don't know if they changed the formula, but these things are
super freaking spicy.
Oh my God. And considering Trader Joe's like regular clientele, I don't know how all these like middle class white people are tolerating this insanely hot Italian sausage.
It was really, really hot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if they changed the recipe.
Speaking as someone who likes spicy food in general.
Yeah.
This was like right on the verge of.
And I wasn't expecting it. And it's funny when you're not expecting it at all. Yes. And all of a sudden you do like the surprise choke. You're like,
whoa. They're not fucking around here.
Okay, man, we got onto a little rant about sausage. So first your sausage gets cooked and you set it aside. Then you saute a diced red onion. I prefer yellow onion.
Agreed.
Then you add mushrooms. Okay, here's the thing. The pan was really crowded. Like, I think the pan was really crowded. And it also instructs you to cover it and cook it. But that way all your veggies are just like steaming.
Yeah.
Which is really unappealing to me.
Yeah, you need to get rid of that liquid. Well, and the recipe instructs you to mix in, I believe, half a cup of heavy cream.
Mm-hmm.
We reduce that because that's a lot of heavy cream for a dish.
And then it has Parmesan and then that gets reduced. And then you're doing this while... your pasta's cooking, and then you add your pasta to the pot, add a little bit of pasta water.
And we did a gluten-free penne. Did you mention that? Yeah.
I think I mentioned it.
Yeah, so we got
didn't mention it.
We got a penne that was just store-bought.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed this dish. I know we had leftovers, and they were great for lunch the following day. It made for a very gray-looking dish.
Yeah.
So it made it hard to photograph just from that perspective.
I think it would have been good with just the tiniest little dash of, like, champagne vinegar at the very end.
No hot sauce?
No. Just brighten it up just a tiny bit.
Yeah, I could see that.
It tasted pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, I enjoyed this dish.
But the way everything steamed just... was very unappealing to me.
Yeah, and that's kind of a common theme. We'll talk about that in the rankings, but I did feel throughout working from this book that there were a lot of techniques that I probably would have done differently to achieve the desired result. And this was no exception.
Agree.
Berea bowls.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the recipe calls for fresh chilies, but Sam also says use dried chilies. For me, when I'm making a braise base, I prefer to use dried chilies always because you can soak them and then make a paste. Anywho, so we used dried chilies.
Do you remember which ones you used?
I used guajillo, ancho, and arbol.
And I don't mean to brag, but our pantry dried chili collection is impressive. We'll give tours.
And then also... the recipe calls for 4 plum tomatoes. It's the middle of winter.
Yeah.
Tomatoes are pallid and gross.
Oh, you mean tomatoes in January in Minneapolis are not ideal?
Right. So we use fire roasted canned tomatoes.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So anyway, you start by charring your onions and garlic, and you're supposed to throw tomatoes in there too, but not for us. Under the broiler. And then you sear your beef. We used a chuck roast. Then it calls to add the stock first and then add your seasoning. I added the season first so it can bloom in the fat a little bit and then add the stock. And then it gets stuck in the oven for 3 hours. Ours took a little bit longer.
Largely a hands-off recipe.
Mm-hmm. So once the meat is tender enough to kind of just shred apart, the cooking liquid gets blitzed, the meat gets shredded, then you make little bowls, serve it with various accoutrements.
Homemade tostadas.
Mm-hmm.
That was delicious. I made some impromptu guacamole for this.
Mm-hmm.
Whipped it up. I realized that we had all the ingredients on hand, so I used one avocado and made like the world's smallest portion of guacamole for us. Because that's how much I love you.
Nicely done.
Homemade guacamole for my lady.
I really appreciated it.
There was no throwing a Berea bowl in your face.
No.
This is subpar. I want to speak to the manager. Cilantro, lime wedges, yogurt. We had all the accessories
yes.
for this.
And then offer your opinion. How did you feel
I liked
about it,
it and we had leftover of the beef and then I just made some like taco slash flatbreads the following day for lunch. But that
is
that,
it a taco or a flatbread?
Well, I did can't you, remember. I you, can't remember if I folded the tortilla that I put it in.
Okay.
Or the, I don't even remember what I put it on. Did I put it on a flatbread?
That's what I was asking.
Yeah, because,
was it a bread or a tortilla?
Lunchtime because comes that, around and I'm just like rooting around in the fridge and it's just kind of frantic activity to get something in my belly.
I'm just saying that like largely kind of hinges on what you're going to call it.
Yep.
What it's made on.
It was bread. I can't remember if I folded it or not.
Okay.
So it was either flatbread or fat taco. I think it might have been a fat taco, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
Oh, no. I used those gluten-free tortillas that we had kicking around in the fridge.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, it was good. This was probably one of my more favorite mm-hmm. Dishes. No surprise, since it has like the nice long cooking time.
Mm-hmm.
And then from perhaps the best one to the worst one, tarragon chicken.
Yeah.
Wah, wah.
This called for the leg quarters, you know, where the thighs attach to the leg. We just use thighs because even at our butcher, they didn't have the quarters. Sometimes they have them, but not in this case. First, you start off searing the legs skin side down to get them crispy. Then you take those out. Then you cook some onion until golden. Add some mushrooms.
This all takes place in a cast iron.
Mm-hmm. Cook those until brown. Then you add garlic. Okay, the book called for garlic after the onion, but by the time the mushrooms are done cooking, the garlic would be burnt. So I added my garlic after the mushrooms.
I was so happy to see the mention in the recipe method of adding the garlic after you cook the onion, because so often people to just throw all that stuff in at the same time. And then, like you said, the garlic gets burned.
And it even says, don't burn the garlic.
Right. So they, you know, they were aware of that, but then they go ahead and throw this in along with the mushrooms. And like you said, by the time those mushrooms are cooked, which, you know, they need to release all that liquid mm-hmm. and stuff, that garlic is going to be hammered.
Mm-hmm.
So,
then you add some stock and you put the chicken in that mixture with the skin side up. But then you cover the pan.
So you're basically steaming the chicken.
Yes.
And ruining that crispy skin that yes. you just created.
And then you're supposed to put the chicken. So you're supposed to cook the chicken till it's fully cooked. Then you stick it under the broiler for, it says to stick it under the broiler for another 6 or 7 minutes. What does that lead to?
Tough chicken.
Yes.
That chicken's tough.
Yeah.
Don't mess with him.
So
he's tough,
and the skin still didn't get as crispy as it.
It did not. We kind of have a method for crispy chicken skin that's pretty foolproof, and so that to follow the recipe and have the results turn out this way was kind of a disappointment.
Yeah, wah, wah.
Yeah, not my favorite. The recipe called for creme fraiche to be stirred into the kind of sauce that you've created mm-hmm. right at the end, and we just skipped that step. Because we didn't have creme fraiche on hand and I didn't want to buy it just to mix in a couple tablespoons in the final sauce.
Oh, I thought like we just forgot it.
We were talking about maybe using yogurt. I think by the time this dish finished, we were just kind of bothered by how unsuccessful it was.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah, we were going to use yogurt.
We ate it.
And
it
then
was
we,
okay.
took the photo and we're like, yeah. Oh, whoops. Okay.
Definitely not my favorite of the recipes.
Mm-mm.
There you have it. Before we dive into our rankings, let's discuss a couple critical Amazon reviews. I found two of them. I thought these were worthwhile to share.
Mm-hmm.
You want to start with the first one?
Sure.
All right.
This one is from Will G, and it's 2 out of 5 stars. Will said, "It doesn't live up to expectations at all. I'm a big fan of Sam's videos, but sadly this cookbook just doesn't provide very exciting or new recipes. Honestly, just stick to his videos. They are far more interesting. Out of this whole cookbook, there were maybe 2 recipes that I would want to try, and neither of them are particularly interesting. Way better cookbooks out there. Avoid this one."
Yeah, so my thoughts on stuff like this, where someone is a self-taught And they achieved popularity from being kind of a social media personality.
Mm-hmm.
Is we've seen this happen previously with books that we've been sent from publishers. And I think, you know, they see the value in maybe agreeing to publish a book because they have a large social media following. And they probably think that this is a way to expand their audience and introduce them to new people. Because we had not heard of Sam before getting this book and working through it. And it seems to me like they'll fast track these books, and they're not, you know, it's not as if this person has the time available or maybe even the interest to like create a whole batch of like fresh new recipes. So largely what they're probably doing is just kind of recycling content that they've already put on social media.
But for
this, that's fair?
But for this, it sounds like that's not what happened. He didn't do stuff that was from his videos. It's just that these recipes, the person finds them
boring.
Oh,
you don't think? Because that was my impression is that, and I guess.
I mean, it happens. It's happened with like several, like you said,
yeah.
To your point, it has happened. But
And I guess maybe I shouldn't have been lazy and I should have checked out his content on social media. But my perception was that this was largely just things that have been previously featured on social media and it was just put into kind of a cookbook format.
Mm.
But I could be wrong.
Mm.
But I can't imagine someone who's got a full-time social media presence would have a lot of time available to just devote to, you know, writing a brand new cookbook with fresh new recipes. But,
yeah.
You know, who knows? Maybe he's got a whole team of people behind his operation. Second critique, 3 out of 5 stars from Sam Oatley. Not what I expected. Probably going against the grain here by the look of the majority of the reviews, but I feel this book is a bit meh. You like that?
Yeah.
Compared with Sam's videos. I'm a big fan of his videos, but a lot of the recipes in this book come up short in comparison. Unimaginative and uninspiring. There are a few exceptions, but I've cooked a lot from this book wanting it to be better, but have been disappointed. If you want a book version of Sam's videos, I don't think this is it. Okay, that answers my question. However, the chicken gyros recipe with homemade pitas is amazing. Kind of wish I would have tried that.
Mm.
I don't know if I want to revisit the book. That leads us into our rankings, food photography and styling. What did you have?
You go first.
I gave it a 5.
Okay.
The photographer is David Loftus, who I know we have reviewed books that he has been involved in previously. Throughout the book, there are these various tutorials that will take you step by step in making a particular thing. There's tortillas, pitas, burger buns from scratch, if that's your jam. Tortellini. So different things like that. I thought those were real useful. Beyond that, there's really not a lot of extra material within the book or extra photographs. It's mostly just like the book photos, some of which do feature Sam in the middle of preparing it in the kitchen. There was a lot of textured surfaces in the photographs. I didn't know if that was like countertops perhaps, or maybe it was, you know, some kind of surfaces that they brought in for the photo shoot. No linens in the photos. I don't know if you caught that as well, but, you know, a lot of photos that we look at in books have like, you know, different linens
right. And
fabrics, and there was none in this. So very sparse styling. Mm-hmm. Many of the dishes are neutral in color, allowing the meal to really like kind of pop off the page. Several of the photos show the dish presented in like a pan or a skillet as if it just came off the stovetop or out of the oven. There's a rustic preparation that's kind of common throughout, which is consistent with the kind of casual rustic preparation of the recipes. Many of the photos feature a utensil kind of tucked into the dish. So it's very inviting. Got a fork or a spoon tucked in there. There's a few action shots, like I said, of Sam cooking or preparing the recipe. There's a few attempts at a more casual presentation that I felt went a bit too far, and it just looked like some sloppy person prepared the meal. So, for instance, there was like a chicken wing recipe on page 151 that had these crushed peanuts scattered everywhere around the plate, but it kind of went like a little overboard with it, where it was not just a few crumbs. It was kind of like someone took a handful and just like threw it on the side next to the plate. Not much to criticize as far as the photos go. They all do look quite good and appetizing. So 5. I felt it hard to like fault it anything for the food photography.
Okay. I gave it a 4. Okay. You pretty much covered everything that I was going to say. I did notice that the backdrops, the surfaces, they were all either gray or white.
Yeah. Neutral color palette. Yeah. Absolutely.
As well as the crockery. Yeah, it was sparsely styled and then had the tutorials for the pita milk or milk bread. It had the photo tutorials for pasta, pita, milk bread, and custard, and I think tortillas.
Yes.
You covered everything.
Yeah. I mean, I found not really any major faults with the photography. They were good. I'm glad that they were not taken by the author, because rarely does that work out as good as it could.
I think Nick Sharma would like to have a word.
No, I'm saying there are exceptions, definitely. But for the most part, anytime someone, if they're not a professional, they try and take the photos themselves, or if they just lift them directly from their social media feed, they usually end up being kind of subpar. Anything else on the photography?
Nope.
Okay. Design and layout.
I gave it a 4. So in terms of, as you were mentioning earlier, in terms of extra information, there's not a lot in this book. There's a brief introduction and then it jumps straight into the recipes. Mm-hmm. There's 7 different chapters, such as brunch, weeknight meals, quick prep, slow cook, all out, which are more complicated, longer meals, sharing plates, sides and salads, and sweet treats. It's funny because the design of the chapter pages makes me think of packaging for like a men's body wash or something.
Oh, really?
To me, it's like aggressively masculine, because it's like a double page layout, black pages, white bold font, the number, and the number of the chapters, like 01, 02. It's just like,
I can see that.
To me, it kind of cracks me up. It just reminds me of like a thing of like Axe body wash or something.
And you also reminded me of, I did take a brief look at his social media feed and just like the cover photos for the videos, and then also just like the photos within the book. But he's adopted this wardrobe of just like a simple black t-shirt, and then so like all the content that he films is just, you know, this very simple outfit,
taking a page out of Michael Kors book.
Yeah, exactly. So it was just kind of interesting that you know, everything within the pages of the book as well as the videos, just like standard issue black t-shirt. Anyway,
So for the recipe pages, there's a dish title and the head note. It denotes the serving size. The dish ingredients are on the left-hand column of the page. The method is on the right-hand side. And the ingredients are clearly separated by the dish components, which I like. I hate when it just is one long list.
Right.
Same goes for the methods. Occasionally there will be like a side note, like a tip or trick, and the ingredients are in bold too as well. So yeah, it was a simple, clean design.
Yeah.
What did you give it?
I gave it a 3.5.
Okay.
Look at me taking a page out of your book.
Yeah, right?
Frankly, the book cover is a bit boring. I feel like that was the thing that stuck out the most. I mean, it's just a photo of him in the middle of preparing a dish. It's nothing exciting. I think the ubiquitous black t-shirt doesn't do any favors. It's not very eye-catching. It's not very... I don't think you'd pass that book amongst a collection in a bookstore and say like, oh, this looks interesting, let me page through this.
To be fair, though, we are probably not his target audience.
No, I get it. More so, you would probably know who he was already, and then, like, you know, you would recognize him on the cover and be like, "Oh, I know this guy."
And that's probably why they did that.
Yeah, like I said, 1.4 million mm-hmm. Instagram followers, can't be wrong. As you mentioned, there's the six chapters. There are the made from scratch sections throughout that give you step by step tutorials. There's a store cupboard section that lists the most commonly used ingredients. I'm not sure how necessary it is, but it's a common inclusion. Recipe head notes are brief, usually just announcing how delicious or easy the dish is, while maybe offering a tip or a suggesting pairing or a personal anecdote. Recipe format's pretty simple and easy to follow. Font choices are basic and easy to read. Like you said, includes the serving sizes, the numbered steps. Not much to say about this. I mean, there's nothing bad about it. There was nothing exceptional about it.
Mm-hmm.
So 3.5.
Okay.
Degree of difficulty.
I gave it a 2.5.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the recipes are easy, but there were things in the cooking method that just gave me pause because I feel like it can lead you to a result that is not exactly what it should be.
Yeah.
That's pretty much all I have to say about it. To be fair, we did not do any baking, so I cannot speak to those recipes. But the recipes...
You didn't want to do any baking after making your four batches of holiday cookies?
No.
Oh.
The recipes in the book are pretty basic.
They're very basic.
So yeah, 2.5. And it's only the 0.5 because I think there could be some confusion with the methods.
Fair.
How about you?
I gave it a 2.
Okay.
Many recipes feature less than 10 ingredients. Since the author is a self-taught home cook, don't expect any in-depth culinary techniques. Yet there's still plenty to keep someone with some solid culinary skills engaged, particularly that made from scratch tutorial, because I felt like there were some things within there that maybe people hadn't attempted before, like making those hamburger buns from scratch or something. No competent home cook should struggle with any of these recipes, but yet, like you said, if you do possess some experience and skill, you might not feel challenged by these, or you might just know of perhaps a better way to achieve the desired result. And I think that was the thing that we kind of struggled mm-hmm. with. So 2, you're probably not going to be disappointed with like cooking any of these, but there could be some challenges within like individual recipes. So
mm-hmm.
2. And then lastly, taste.
What did you give it?
I gave it a 3.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of the recipes could have been improved upon, as we discussed previously, mainly as it relates to the methods. And then I just provided the example of the crispy chicken skin as kind of an area that maybe could use improvement.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, I liked the dish. I mean, there was nothing that was a complete fail where we had to reach for an emergency frozen pizza.
Right.
But I can't think of any of the dishes that were real standouts for me. There were some I enjoyed more than others, but that was about the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you have?
I too gave it a 3.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was not a recipe that blew my hair back where I was like, oh, gotta make this again.
Right.
Because I'll get to that in a little bit. For me, like the spice levels, if you have like a mid-range palate, like the spice levels were good and stuff. There's mm-hmm. not a lot of adjusting, but there's nothing. It's nothing tastes extraordinary or anything.
Yeah.
But there was nothing that I ate where I was like, this is terrible.
Yeah.
So middle of the road, gave it a 3.
Works for me.
Mm-hmm.
So based on that review, is this a buy, borrow, or banish for you?
Banish. For me, it's a book of, like, I just don't need to own it.
Yeah.
I'm not the target audience. Like, we've worked with books that are like easy, simple meals, like The Milk Street. Those are ones that I will hang on to.
Right.
Because of the wide range of dishes. This mm-hmm. is like, this is nothing new. A lot of this stuff is just stuff I would throw together as a pantry meal.
Right.
Kind of improvise. But if you're a novice cook, you might want it.
Yeah.
How about you?
Sadly, I think this is also a banish for me. Mm-hmm. I just can't picture a scenario where I would recommend someone buying this or much less borrowing it.
Yeah.
I guess that maybe if you're a super fan of his videos, borrow it, see what you think.
Yeah, because that seems to be a big issue. Like, the book is not as great as his videos.
Well, and there are other people who got their start as social media personalities and then kind of parlayed that popularity into cookbooks and other opportunities within the food sphere. And like Gabby Dalkin, What's Gabby Cooking, mm-hmm. comes to mind. Half-Baked Harvest, to some degree, even like Molly Baz. Well, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like these are people that...
I mean, she's worked in the industry.
Sure, sure. Well, and as these other people have too, but it's just, it's coming more from an angle of like, most of them are going to be self-taught. Most of them are focused on the home cook.
Right.
Or like, you know, and I just felt like when you take that into consideration, there's better example, mm-hmm. You know, to give a like a UK equivalent, Nadia Hussein.
Nigella.
Yeah. I mean, like there's just other people in that same orbit that are kind of doing it better than this book.
Sure.
I don't want to come across as necessarily like harsh or to yuck this guy's yum, but that's just...
I mean, kudos to him for he got a book out and he's
exactly.
really successful.
We
so.
Don't have a cookbook. All right.
Okay.
Well, now we've reached the gastro obscura portion of the show, exploring the weird and wonderful culinary traditions, experiences, and ingredients. I have no idea what you're going to discuss today.
Okay. So
what you got?
I'm doing 6 delightful Christmas foods and traditions around the world.
Okay.
Full disclosure, this article is 13, but it was proving to be... taking way too long, so I cut it down to 6.
No, I like this. Okay, so you picked your 6 favorites.
Yes,
and
okay.
And they're ones I presume people will not necessarily know about.
Sure.
All right.
Okay, the first one is Lamprea de Ovos. This is a Portuguese sweet made from sugar. So this is from Portugal, obviously.
Okay.
This is a Portuguese sweet. It's made from sugar syrup, almonds, and eggs, and it's shaped into a lamprey eel. The body is made from a paste of sweetened egg yolks and grated almonds, and then it's covered in sheets of egg yolks and syrup, gets browned in the oven.
Sounds real simple to make.
Right? And then it gets adorned with strands of beaten egg and sugar.
You said beet?
Beet, no. Beaten egg.
Oh,
eggs,
okay.
Eggs and sugar beaten together.
I was getting nervous for a second. I was like, beets in this sweet dish?
No.
Sounds terrible.
If you whip it together, it gets like ribbony and then you...
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then it gets candy cherry eyes and a couple of almond teeth. And
so it's basically a lot of eggs and a lot of sugar.
Yes.
And so the almonds get like ground up is what you were saying?
Yeah. It's basically like there's some almond... It's like almond flour.
What's the little dessert that's made from like almond paste? Is that marzipan?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is that what it's going to kind of flavor profile?
I would
similar?
I would imagine.
Huh.
Yeah.
And then they shape it into an eel.
Into an eel.
Like a large eel?
Yeah. Yeah. Lampreys are pretty big.
Huh.
But I'm sure it's not like lamp life size.
I wonder why the choice of the eel. Is that something that's kind of popular in Portuguese culture?
There is
it like a bear or like a deer in the U.S. or like a raccoon?
Here.
People love their raccoons here. Or T-Rex. People like T-Rexes. You want me to keep going?
Here, let me see why they...
What's up with Portuguese and their eels? This first example prompts more questions than it answers.
Okay, why the lamprey eel? Portuguese love the ugly river fish because the fish, it served as a red meat replacement for hundreds of years. Apparently, the texture is comparable to slow-cooked beefsteak.
I'm calling bullshit on that.
And, well, it dates back to the 16th century, like from tablets from the 16th, recipe tablets from the 16th century. So, and it's good for Lent because it's a good, like actual eel is a good substitute for red meat.
Interesting. I'm really craving a hamburger. Well, have some eel instead.
Right?
Huh. Okay.
Okay. So we are moving on to Germany. This is the Feuersangenbowl.
Oh, well done.
Mm-hmm. Which means fire tongue punch. It sounds angry, doesn't it?
It certainly does.
So this is a traditional mulled wine mixed with a rum that's over 50% alcohol. And then you take a compressed sugar cone, which is called a Zuckerhut, and that gets soaked in the rum. The cone gets set on top of a metal grate, and then you light the cone on fire.
There's a whole pageantry surrounding this
It's a ritual. Huh. So you light the cone on fire, and then the boozy sugar drips into the glass, and it gives the wine a sweet, caramely flavor.
Ooh. And probably produces a mean hangover.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of sugar.
And the mulled wine is called Glühwein. It's the stuff that we have at the European market at Christmas.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this one I'm going to butcher. I've listened to the pronunciation 1,000 times. It's Welsh, and it's called
You're not fluent in Welsh?
No.
Oh.
Okay, so it's called Ifarilud.
Okay. I mean, you did better than I would, so go you.
So there's this thing where groups of people go door to door, and they are carrying a horse skull that is decorated in ribbons and bells, and it's carried by a person covered in a white cloth.
I don't think you'd get a real warm reception showing up at someone's door around here with a horse skull.
Well,
under your arm.
It's a thing there.
I think you'd be asked
It's not
leave.
Under your arm. Oh. They're carrying it on a pole.
Oh, even better. That
and
doesn't look menacing at all.
And the person carrying you can't see the person carrying it because they're covered in a white sheet.
Oh, this is even better.
Okay, so it gets better. Okay, so this person holding the horse head is the leader, and they will go door to door from residents. And what they do with the residents is engage in a spoken poetry battle to win food and drink.
See, and if they were also like fucking or something, then that would be like the end credits for Midsummer or something. Oof. Some twisted movie.
What?
I don't know. I'm just making stuff up.
Yeah, you
this
are.
This sounds like kind of culty, though.
I mean, it's pagan.
They're trying to recruit you, I think, with their horse head.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Do you have more?
Yes, I do.
All right.
Okay. This one is from the Philippines. It's called Puto Bumbong.
Yes.
So the Philippines has, fun fact, it has one of the longest Christmas seasons. It lasts from September until the end of December.
Whoa, they're not messing around.
That would be exhausting.
It's a lot.
During these festivities, there's a wide array of delectable and colorful treats. Puto Bumbong is one of those treats. It's a dark brownish sticky rice that goes through a several day treatment / preparation. When that's done, the rice is deep purple and it's presented.
Where does it get the purple from it? Is it like the ube?
No, there's no ube in it. However, these are being made today with ube because it's quicker. I mean, okay. You can still get the original, but no, it's just the process that it goes through. The rice turns from like reddish brown to bright purple.
Okay.
And it's presented on a banana leaf and it's shaped in a cylinder and it's slathered with butter and then freshly grated coconut and muscovado sugar.
Wow. Sounds healthy.
I think it sounds so good. Okay.
Well, you just need to visit the Philippines anytime between September and December.
Right?
you can get one.
Mm-hmm.
They'll hook you up.
Then there is the Christmas pickle. I think I did this one already.
I think you might be. But let's revisit.
Sure. So it has its origin in Germany. We're back in Germany.
Okay.
It's known as the Weihnachtsgurke, and it was this tradition was resurrected in Michigan. According to legend, a Bavarian soldier was captured in the Civil War, but his captors treated him very kindly and gave him a pickle to keep from starving. So in remembrance of these lovely soldiers who were holding him captive, he would put a pickle in his tree for Christmas.
I'm stuffed. I can't eat anymore. I had a pickle right? earlier.
So now in these modern times, someone will hide like a pickle decoration in the tree, and whoever finds the pickle decoration gets to open the first present.
Yeah, I played hide the pickle before. I'm no stranger to
that. As long as it's not hide the cornichon.
What are you implying?
I am not implying that. Okay, and here's one last one.
Okay.
Christmas risengrød. This is from Denmark. So the folklore is that there are elvish gnomish creatures that live in barns, and they become very active during December. And depending on how they are treated, they will either be helpful or harmful.
Friend or foe.
Yes. So families would leave these little elves treats out of rice pudding to curry favor, which is what the risengrød is. It's rice pudding.
Okay.
So they wanted to curry favor with the elves. The tradition continues today as this rice pudding is served on Christmas Eve. It's usually zhuzhed up with a little bit of vanilla, whipped cream, almonds, and a warm cherry sauce. Ooh. And as a game, someone will put a single whole almond in it, and you have to eat until you find the single whole almond.
It's kind of like a king cake.
Yes, it is.
Ah.
Don't break your teeth on that.
I was going to say, how many teeth have been chipped?
How many babies have you swallowed?
I sense a lawsuit coming.
Mm-hmm. So that's it.
Good list.
Yes, thank you so much. If you enjoyed the show, please rank and review us. You can follow us on our social medias. Our Instagram is @we_cook_books, and our Facebook is @wecookbooks.
All right. I'm putting all my eggs in a single basket for this episode-ending food joke.
You have one joke.
I have one joke.
Ooh.
It's got to be a good one. Okay. I got to deliver, because if not, I got no backup.
All right.
And we're going to be ending the episode on a sour note. So no pressure or anything.
No pressure.
There's an admiral. He's visiting one of his ships. And while having tea, he notices that the biscuit he's eating has the ship's insignia embossed on it. Impressed, he asks the cook how it was done. And the cook says, when rolling the biscuits, I press each one onto my belt buckle before placing them into the oven. And he says, that's impressive, but I have to say it's not very hygienic. And he says, in that case, sir, I'd suggest you skip the donuts. Success. All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a fantastic week.
Stay safe.
Stay hungry.
Bye.